December. December's a hard month with choir concerts, OB concerts, and all things Christmas. So thank you so much for being here tonight in what is a very, very busy time of year for everybody. It's not a Wendy Happy show tonight. How many of you are happy to hear that?
Woo! I love you, Wendy.
So it's all about somebody else tonight. So I'm going to turn it over to Lori Kuykendall. I have kind of run around circles with her for several years, seeing her speak in several different settings. But I gave you a flyer just so you have a tiny bit of information on her. This is a flyer for a Zoom kind of webinar thing that Dr. Hammond and I attended with her. So just so you have a little bit of information, I did go ahead and hand out a copy of her PowerPoint. If you wanted to take notes, jot questions, anything like that, she is going to give you a few minutes to answer questions at the end. What she's going to tell you is a lot of what you heard last week, but in a much better way. This is what she does. She's great at delivering information. She's a lot more formal. She's a lot better than I am. So also, I put it on the table, but I didn't hand it out. There are several things from the Medical Institute over there on the table. If you have any questions or curious about the programs that they do, they're over there at the table. You can grab them when we're done tonight. Any questions for me or anything? Macy is out. She is the keeper of the minutes. So she had to kind of be out at the last minute for an emergency surgery. So I don't have the minutes. What I will do, as soon as she said she can send them to me, I will email that to y'all for approval. So it's not something that we forgot, but it was something she couldn't help. So we will catch up on that. Lee is going to take minutes tonight. So if she has to ask who asked that or anything, direct that to Lee, please, until we get Macy back, hopefully next month. Any questions? All right, I'm going to turn it over to Lori.
Thank you, Wendy, and I will echo the thank you to you all for coming out on a December night and being committed to your role as CHAC members for Mesquite ISD. I'm excited to share with you this content for School Health Advisory Councils. A lot has happened and changed around the role of School Health Advisory Councils, around the new health teaks, around some new legislation that passed through, so I want to make sure you're up to speed on all of it so that you can be up to speed with making things happen in your district for the health and well-being of your students. So I want to say up front, this is not an official Texas Education Agency program. It's not endorsed or sponsored by TEA or the State Board of Education. I will introduce you to Medical Institute and why we speak on this topic as subject matter experts, as we're called when we're down testifying on things. And then I'll introduce you to myself a little bit, and then we'll dive into the content. So again, thank you for being here. And I think if you'll take notes and maybe jot a question down as we go, we'll take questions then at the end. We'll just kind of keep moving through the content up front, and then as you all have questions or further discussion, I'm available when we're done. So again, this is Medical Institute. This is our website where you can access all of our resources. We are a national organization, really international. I did a training last evening by Zoom for Antigua and Barbuda, a country, you know, down in the Caribbean, one of the several of the islands down there. So we're glad to be based here in Dallas and reach you all. We certainly have a special heart for our Texas friends, for sure. So Medical Institute was founded in Austin in 1992. Dr. Joe McElhaney was an OBGYN with a thriving women's health practice in the Austin area. He did a lot of infertility treatment, in fact, was so moved by seeing many women and couples struggling to start their families, suffering from the outcomes of sexually transmitted diseases. Many of them didn't know they had those diseases, and neither did even know about those diseases, and yet they had hampered their ability to start their families as they would like to. So Dr. Joe, as we call him now at 86 years old, is still a part of our work and serves on our board as our founder, and I'm glad to follow up after him. But really, his heart is credibility in the kinds of science we provide as a science-based public health organization, and his heart really is compassion for the young people, the families that are affected by not having good information to make the best decisions for their current sexual health, and there's a lot we can unpack about that. I just want you to know who we are. We provide medically accurate research, whole health, as in whole person health education, and advocacy-based leadership. We can be reached easily at medinstitute@medinstitute.org. You also may have picked up my card for my direct email then as well. I'm Lori, you've already heard that. I am the president and CEO. I earned my bachelor's in health from Texas A&M. I know we got a look back here from this guy, maybe a couple of others. Thank you. Okay, good. Awesome. I later earned my MPH in health promotion from Liberty University, and I started an organization in the Fort Bend area outside of Houston called Abstinence Leadership Education Resources for Teens. We were one of the first Title V federal-funded abstinence programs in the state a while ago. And then for a number of years, I ran Aim for Success, the largest provider of live health education programs in the state of Texas. They have since merged with Just Say Yes, Youth Equipped to Succeed. Those are great organizations. And then I came on over to Medical Institute in the summer of 2020. Worked with probably 50 different shacks in those 25 years of being involved in health education in Texas schools. Most recently was a part of the Health Teeks Review, sat on three of the six work groups that wrote the Teeks, so I'm pretty familiar with the content in the Teeks. I was invited to give testimony to the State Board of Education, worked this year at the legislative level, and then most recently, weeks right before Thanksgiving, I was a part of testifying and assisting the board and the publishers with the instructional materials review that went down. I'll tell you about that when we get to the Health Teeks content. So that's what we've got. We're going to take on four topics tonight, really an overview of shacks. Wendy's already prepared you well, so I'm just going to quickly refresh you on some of the background about why you're here and what your important job is. And then we'll look at House Bill 1525 that passed this summer as it applies to new shacks and then the new opt-in requirements. And then we'll look at the new health teaks that were voted on and approved about a year ago, November of 2020. They go effective next school year, 2022 and 2023. That's why your role is really important right now, so that come next school year, you all will be compliant and teaching all the new teaks. So we'll look at all of that as we cruise through this content together tonight. So if you're not familiar with already, there's a guide for Texas school districts for shacks from the Texas Health and Human Services. It's a good guide. You'll see it was revised in January of this year, so it doesn't have the newest content I'm going to show you. Here's its table of contents, a lot of good, very practical tools for you all to use as you're working through your shack and while you're here. I pulled this questions out. I won't read through all of them. I love these questions to really set up your work as shacks. You know, what three things do you like best about our schools? If we could change one thing, what would it be? And then question eight, what could this shack do to make this community a better place to live? I think you have a really important role, and I want to appreciate the work that you're doing here together and on behalf of the children who will benefit, on the parents and families, and ultimately the community of Mesquite who will benefit from your work. Healthier students are better learners. We know that. My field is health education, so, and several of you are related to that, and I feel passionately about this. But if you look at the CDC, this middle statement here talks about six types of health risk behaviors that contribute to the leading causes of death, disability, and social problems, and they list out tobacco use, unhealthy eating, inadequate physical activity, alcohol and other drug use, sexual behaviors that may result in HIV infection and other STDs and unintended pregnancy, and violence. Shacks take on all of that to help make healthier learners, healthier students who learn better. I will focus heavily around the sexual behavior topic or the reproductive and sexual health topic. That's where my background is in, but that's where we have the most contention and most challenge. Everybody pretty much agrees kids should eat healthy and get good exercise. But on sex education, things can get a little dicey, right? So we're going to talk about that in a realistic way, always coming back to what the law says, and second to that, what health education, what the scientific principles of health would say about that topic. So the job of the shack is to make sure that the school district's school health programs reflect your local community values. That's why SHACs were put in place. You are an advisory group. You'll hear that repeated throughout a couple of the legislative pieces, making recommendations, but ultimately the vote is at the board of trustee level. And I think you all have already gone over a lot of this. So I pulled this slide. There are 1,200 school districts. The reason SHACs, in my opinion, are a genius kind of legislation, a genius policy, is it took all of these differences and brought them back to you for this district, for this community, that your local community values would be reflected in the health that's taught here. Here's a slide from people living with HIV by county. Look how different Texas is by depending on where you live. So the health needs are very different. Sort of centralized around the city is where we see HIV as other STDs as well. But take a look at teen birth rate. It's a lot more spread out across the areas and regionally. It looks very different. My point being, every district is different when it comes to the health needs of your students. So it starts with health needs and then community values, which you all are representing by your service here on the SHAC. So there's in the guide, there are several sets of legislative pieces that have affected, just kind of listed out. The first one was in 1995 when the adding of 28.004, you'll hear me say that a lot, health for human sexuality instruction, and then established local health education advisory councils, later to be called school health advisory councils, as part of Chapter 28 of the Education Code. That's where we see courses of study that are both essential knowledge and skills for foundation and enrichment curriculum. Health is an enrichment curriculum. So let's take a look at what 28004, as I say it quickly, has to do about your purpose and organization. You all have already gone over a lot of this. I'll just bring up a couple of questions that make sure you're in compliance, which I know you already are, but it's helpful to look at. How is the SHAC surveyed, evaluated, and or included local community values in reviewing and selecting health education instructional materials? Have you been intentional about the people that sit at these tables and the people that you all are listening to bring your values to the communication, to be about making those recommendations to the board? Again, the key being recommending and advising. There are several other kinds of advisory groups in districts, or there can be. This one's pretty unique, but it doesn't make the vote, it advises the vote. And then you're going to recommend hours of instruction. I already asked this question. Does the SHAC leadership and your membership understand its role as an advisory entity? But I want you to see in this section C here, your role is recommending the number of hours of instruction to be provided by law in health through kindergarten through grade 8. And if the school district requires health education, which I understand Ms. Mead does, which I would give you kudos for that, the state took away that recommendation, but a lot of districts, I'm glad, still continue to require it for high school graduation. When we get to the TEKS, you'll see where that Health 1 and now Health 2 offering are given with content in the new Health TEKS. But this is interesting because across the state, kindergarten through eighth grade is required health instruction. That is different than when the health TEKS were written in 1998. So in 1998, health was required for high school graduation. So when we get to the TEKS, it'll make sense. We push down some of the content that had been sitting in high school into K through 8 so that every child in Texas would get that instruction. So that's coming along there. You're looking at policies, procedures, strategies, and curriculum across all of these kinds of topics and physical health concerns and mental health concerns. And I've seen SHACs take on concussion protocol and snacks in the vending machine. There's a lot of topics. But again, when it comes down to appropriate grade levels and methods of instruction for human sexuality instruction, that seems to be really the hardest one and can be really critical for engaging the SHAC fullest as it was intended to be engaged. A little bit about membership. I think you all already have a lot of this in place. The Board of Trustees appointing 5 members, and you all have more than that, are the majority of members, parents of students who are enrolled in the district but are not employed by the district. This is the biggest one districts get in trouble on. I can tell just by spotting you, we've probably got this one covered. And that's a really important in serving as chair or co-chair in the law. And then this is all the other places you can get community representation from, which I would guess there's a number of that represented here too as well. I had someone call and say, they told me a pastor couldn't serve on our shack. And I said, well, actually, let's look in the law, because the law says clergy can be here as well as a number of other representatives from the community to, again, reflect those community values on this topic. So shack meetings, how are they to be run? I want to show you, the slide will change colors. This brighter blue with a different heading shows us now House Bill 1525 that was adopted in 2021. Sorry about that. Everything that's underlined is new. These are changing of 28004 by this new legislation. Why did they do it? Because as I've already referenced, a lot of shacks are not running as well as you are. And they certainly don't have as good of food as you all have. But they had to increase the kind of the regulations and the transparency, a lot of it. You'll hear that as you look at these. It's elevating transparency back to the community, to the parents and other stakeholders in the community to be a part of what's happening in this room and the decisions you all are looking at. So you'll see now we're going to post the notice, 72 hours, make sure they're recorded. We've got that going. We've got minutes going. Making an audio and posting it back up afterwards. So in summary, at least three, but I bet you all did it more than that before, posting those meeting details coming up as public meetings, prepare and maintain the minutes, record it, and then within 10 minutes, submit those minutes and reporting to the district so they can go up on the website. This is all in that new legislation. And then, post it back up on the website. Back into the original language around sexuality instruction, I do want to read through this material because a lot of people get confused on these laws here that we have in Texas around. Any course materials and instruction related to human sexuality, STDs, HIV, or AIDS shall be selected by the board with the advice of the local shack. But I'm going to read through these five pieces of subsection E, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, that will show us about the kind of content the law says must be taught in Texas. This law has not changed. So number one, present abstinence from sexual activity as the preferred choice of behavior in relationship to all sexual activity for unmarried persons of school age. That's some pretty good legalese if you ask me. But you see, abstinence from sexual activity, which is a broader term than just sex, if you think about it. So a question would be, how do the instructional materials define abstinence? Is it clear that it's abstinence from sexual activity? When you work with young people, you know how concrete their brains are. So it's not just don't do it. It's actually a broader definition that includes vaginal, oral, and anal sex and sexual contact. But why? Because those things put them at risk for STDs, for emotional risks as well. Even if a pregnancy can technically occur. So that's part of what's here in the law. And how do they teach that as the preferred choice for unmarried persons? What clear and relevant terminology is used for them to have that understanding? I like the word preferred choice, and I like to liken it to McDonald's and Burger King selling hamburgers. If McDonald's wants to sell you their hamburgers as a preferred hamburger, they don't say, ours is great, but Burger King's are good too. They want you to hone in on their choice, their best, and what they see as the preferred choice for hamburgers. So sometimes we get into these kind of dual or mixed messages. This is making it clear that it should be a clear message about that preferred choice. Going on to number two says, devote more attention to abstinence from sexual activity than to any other behavior. So a question to look at as you're looking at curriculum and the one you're using, choosing the best would be a great example to do this with. Quantify the numbers of chapters and pages devoted to helping students choose abstinence from sexual activity. And does the majority of that content give this clear instruction and help develop skills? I think skills are really important, more than just the information and the knowledge that goes along. Number three, a lot of words here again emphasizing that abstinence from sexual activity, if used consistently and correctly, is the only method that is 100% effective in preventing pregnancy, STDs, infection with HIV or AIDS, and the emotional trauma associated with adolescent sexual activity. When we were writing the new TEKS and the language that is in the new health TEKS in the work groups at TEA, we were pulling this language off of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, incorporating it straight into the health TEKS so that the health TEKS align with these laws. So a question to ask would be, how are the risks of pregnancy included? Also, STDs and HIV and AIDS. A lot of times, contraception is addressed just for pregnancy. And yet here it's not just pregnancy, but the importance of STDs, and including HIV and AIDS. And then it goes beyond that, not just the physical risks, but the emotional risks as well. In fact, the law says emotional trauma, and a group of us working that day decided, you know what, I think trauma in 2021 means a whole other set of mental and emotional challenges. So in the TEEK, you'll see emotional risks inserted where it hadn't been before to align with this piece of the legislation. All right, number four, we are getting there. Direct adolescence to a standard of behavior in which abstinence from sexual activity before marriage is the most effective way to prevent pregnancy. I'm not going to keep saying all those things over and over again for you. So how is abstinence from sexual activity before marriage normalized as a standard of behavior for adolescents? In reviewing some of the instructional materials that were proposed this year in the spring going into the final vote in November, several of them were very troubling in this area about what was being normalized for the kids, really, and the way the information was taught or what was being upheld pointed differently to this. So I would say if it doesn't normalize abstinence from sexual activity before marriage, then it's not in line with this law. So you could ask, looking at curriculum, how many times is the word marriage or married included, and is it in a positive context? I was reviewing a popular Texas curriculum, and they said the one place marriage occurred, it said your parents may want you to wait for marriage, but you can make your own decision. That's a negative context about away from this decision rather than leading towards it, as an example. And then the last piece is about contraception. It tells us to teach contraception and condom use in terms of human use reality rates. That's different than a theoretical laboratory rate. If instruction on contraception and condoms is included in the curriculum content, that if is really important. But I'll show you the one student expectation that came in on contraception in the new TEEKS for 7th and 8th grade and the one that's now in health. A lot of people celebrated that that was a big deal to add that into the TEEKS, but it's really just one of the 617 TEEKS that we've got is now talking about this, and it has the same language there as well. So is it, are we talking about contraception and condoms and using what kind of usage or failure rates? A human use reality rate versus a theoretical laboratory rate is really important. We're talking about kids. Kids are not in a laboratory, especially when they're at risk of putting themselves in a sexual decision. They are usually operating under hormones, other kinds of brain chemistry happening that doesn't necessarily allow them to achieve laboratory rates of condom usage. Are you following me? If you have teenagers in your home, you know there's not a lot that happens consistently and correctly, much less alone something in this scenario. So how are they taught the difference is a part of that too. All right, so that's where sex ed lies, right there in 28004 section E1 through 5. Going on then to look at how are we going to adopt this new sexuality curriculum that meets the TEEKS and follows 28004. These are, again, new blue slides that bring out House Bill 1525, everything underlined because it's all new. It makes your job a little harder, but again, the spirit of it was to increase your transparency back out to the community and the parents. So it says the Board of Trustees will adopt the policy establishing this process for the adoption of curriculum materials to meet the human sexuality instruction. And you're going to, number one, adopt a resolution that convenes the local SHAC. I think we're working on that. We've got to get that in place so that then you all can meet. You will hold two public meetings. I'm reading all the way through it. You will provide your recommendations back to the board, and then the board will adopt that recommendation by a record vote at a public meeting. That will summarize here in a chart in just a second. It goes on to say they must be made available to be seen, to be viewed for review going into those public meetings. And they must be based on the advice of the local school health advisory council. That's your job. They must be suitable for the subject at grade level. That's the same language the State Board of Education uses when they're making their official adopted SBOE curriculum materials, which there is now one publisher that has been approved for middle school and high school. That suitability, though, is something you all are watching out for, too, and it hasn't been reviewed by academic experts in this subject at grade level. So we want to make sure that is met. Here's the six steps kind of laid out. The board starts off convening the SHAC to do this job. and then you go from there, making those curriculum materials to public meetings you all will have to hear on the proposed curriculum and materials you're showing. And then once that's all in place, you're good to advise and make the vote go through. Two other little dangling pieces back from 28004, districts may not distribute condoms in connection with instruction related to human sexuality, and a school district that provides human sexuality instruction may separate the students according to sex for instructional purposes. I know that a lot of times that happens at the younger grade, but it shows here in the law that that's a legal thing for you to be able to do. Bit more coming in, parental notification and consent. This is kind of a big news piece further on in this House Bill 1525. Not only did it describe these new SHAC regulations, it now showed parental consent and the changes of laws here. So you'll see things crossed out and changes. Now we're going to see at the beginning of the district, we're going to have a detailed description of the content of the district's human sexuality instruction and a general schedule on which the instruction will be provided. To give you an example of how these things go down in the legislative and when we're working on bills and language, at first they wanted the specific schedule by which you were going to teach this instruction. And the teachers, the educators said, we can't do that at the beginning of the school year. Too many things flex around. We have our lesson plans, but then reality can kind of bump those around a little bit. So we want to give a detailed description of the content. You can't just kind of give a high-level outline. They want pretty in-depth of the content, but you're going to be able to do that with a general idea of when you will be teaching it to the students. And you need a statement that the parents have rights and their discretion to purchase a copy of those materials, remove the student from any part of it that was already there, and now to use the grievance procedure or the appeals process. We don't want that to happen. We want to keep parents engaged following these new regulations and have that transparency there to get their input. But then this is where it really changes. So, wait a second. We're going along. A statement that any curriculum materials must be used. Coming up about how to make those materials available. There's a difference between if they're in the public domain or if they're copyrighted purchased, and that can be a little bit of a booger. But all of our the people working with you in Texas, the publishers and the curriculum providers, should be able to figure out how to let you review the content without stealing their content off the copyright side. So that's a little bit about what you see about public domain and copyright in here. But then here's a big slide. I2 in 1525 says, before a student may be provided with human sexuality instruction, a school district must obtain the written consent of the student's parent. This is different. All sexuality instruction in Texas is now opt-in, where previously it had been opt-out. So you would give the notice to everybody, and if the parents didn't want their child in, they would take the child out. You would provide an alternative location and activity for them to do. That has switched entirely, and this is a big news across the state. People are trying to figure out how we can accommodate opt-in, where every child must return the written consent form back to the school before they can have human sexuality instruction. So a couple of things it tells us about those permission forms. They can't be included with other kinds of notifications or requests. So you can't stick them in at that opening of the year packet. They have to be a separate communication. They must be provided to the parent not later than 14 days before that instruction begins. I would tell you that this sounds really hard and really different. The way I've likened it to, though, is schools know how to get parent permission. If you're going to take the kids to the arboretum or somewhere, you're going to get their written permission. So use those communication channels, the same kind of strategy. Part of what it has to do, too, is we have to up the communication and the engagement of parents on this really important topic. It is a challenge administratively. I'm not going to pretend like it's not. But I think there's a lot that values this content and why they put it in place as the new law in Texas. I'm hearing mumblings. We'll come back to discuss it. Let's keep going. Making that curriculum materials available. Again, this is kind of just details about how they need to see it, whether they can provide it at the school or they can access it online. There's some pretty specific language here. Some of that was the lobby of the publisher saying, hey, our stuff's copyright. Some of it was the lobby of the parents saying, hey, we need to see it all. So it's kind of how these things play out around new legislation. So they can see that at the school campus, or they can access it online for that curriculum. And that's what this goes on to say here as well. Purchasing from a publisher, they have to be, if the parent wants to purchase it from the publisher, they can, at a price that does not exceed the price per unit paid by the district. This clarifies that curriculum materials are everything. The books, the slides, the DVDs, the videos, whatever the handouts, the student booklets that would be available as part of that. And then it kind of reinforces that anything related to human sexuality includes reproductive health. All right, so that took us through House Bill 1525. And I'll switch us now into talking about new health teas. But actually, I think because we're okay on time, if anybody has a question before I dive into the teas, we could do that. And I think that would make sense. We covered a lot. Anybody want to take up a question we've already covered?
It says here that it's you want to define the instructional materials about abstinence and what when he talks about sexual activity, what's included. So you're going to include pornography, you know, because we are bombarded with sex.
Yes.
You can't watch a show without seeing something.
Yes.
Sometimes it's nice, sometimes it's not.
I'm so glad you asked that.
But because I mean, it's like she's talking about. But it has to be said. And you want to include pornography in this? And the access younger kids have to these kind of materials? How are they going to prevent that from happening?
That's a great question. You'll see when I dive into the new teaks where that content was included, because it wasn't there in 1998 when those teaks were last written for health. It is there in 2021. Several places throughout are going to look at that digital citizenship or healthy use of and understanding reliable sources of information and technology, and pornography and sexting is all in there. Absolutely. Part of it is in around relationships. Part of it's in around injury, violence, and prevention. Part of it's in the sexuality content also. Good question.
My question was about, you said something about we had to present in a public meeting this information twice a year?
Part of the approval is that there would be two public meetings and really a hearing that the public could come and voice to you all, the SHAC, their input on the materials. Similar to what the State Board of Education does, they put out the materials, they have a hearing, people can come and speak into it. So you're getting feedback, you put it out and make it available to the district and the community, really, because your job is to reflect their values. So those can get interesting, as you can imagine at times, but it's part of the process, for sure. All right, let's go ahead.
Just comment. These little boxes that you put up after the slide that you read, those were like our prompts whenever we're thinking about looking at the new workbooks or the new school books. That's what we're kind of thinking about. Is that
yes, I call those compliance questions. They're okay. Questions that kind of reflect back what's in that law to see if things are, if you're complying with the law.
Okay.
Yeah, good question. Thank you. All right, let's dive into the new health TEKS. I have been told by TEA they are TEKS or they are TEKS. Both is correct, but I can't say TEKS because that's Texas, or big Texas at the State Fair. So I say TEKS. I'll tell you one other little thing about TEKS that are interesting here in a minute. A little bit of background information about these TEKS. They were revised, as I said, in 98. There was a two-year process that was commissioned first by the State Board of Education, conducted by TEA, that started in the summer, really, of 2019. There was a commissioner study and report. There were content advisors, seven experts from across the state from different fields, PhDs and MDs that were part of these content advisors. There were six work groups, which pulled in a lot of educators from across the state. I was a part of that as a community professional, also being a part of that. I served on three of those. And then there were some public hearings. There was a vote in 2020, and they will go effective next school year. So you can see in this timeline, they get the TEKS in place, and then they spend almost a year getting the instructional materials approved, and then coming in the next school year is when they're ready to go and be implemented. So a little bit about TEKS. They are required instruction according to the administrative code for both foundation and enrichment topics. We saw that earlier. They are adopted at the state level and includes all of these kinds of schools. The curriculum is selected, reviewed, and adopted by the school board, so it brings the local control back down. We've talked about that already. And then you all make those recommendations going back up to the board on health curriculum as a whole, including human sexuality instruction. Several state board members were quick to remind everybody, this is not just about sex ed. This is health. The whole entire health curriculum, there are six strands. Only one of them is reproductive and sexual health. So here's a TEA graphic that helps us understand what TEKS look like. There's an introduction and standards, and then in those standards, you'll see the knowledge and skills statements and student expectations. One line at a time is an A student expectation. We've been told we shouldn't ever say it's a TEK. There isn't a such thing as a TEK. There might be a student expectation, but there's not a TEK. TEKS are an entire TEK. So I've learned that through this process. A lot of us use that in different ways, but that's the accurate way to say it. I mentioned the six strands that the health curriculum was set up into, and the individual student expectations were written in across these six strands. You'll notice I highlight reproductive and sexual health now begins in fourth grade. There are two SEs in fourth grade, and I'll show you what those are. Everybody gets kind of worried about that, but if you think about it, in 1998, the average age of puberty starting was about 18 months later than it does now. So now we've got younger children coming into puberty. They wanted to move that content down just a little bit down into fourth grade. And a lot of schools are already showing. I learned some schools today are just doing it to the girls in fourth grade. Now the TEKS will have us do the girls and the boys together. There are 617 of them. You'll see how they break out across the strands. A lot of work went into mental health and wellness. That's not my specialty, but I would bring it to your attention that a lot of content was added given all the mental and emotional crises of our day that young people are facing. So that's really been bolstered up. Injury and violence protection and safety has a lot of the technology pieces as well that are different in today. There's some things about safety in there, just very broad about personal safety. ATOD, as I call it, alcohol, tobacco, other drugs, and then quite a bit then in reproductive and sexual health. Across the grade levels, they split out like this, a comparison from back then till today, and the big jump, 147 new ones. And actually, they're all new in a sense, but you'll notice where we got a big jump is here in sixth grade and seventh and eighth grade. That's because, as I was mentioning earlier, we had to push down some of the required content into eighth grade because where Health 1 and Health 2 are not required across the state. So if we wanted to ensure that 5.5 million students got the information, it bumped down into middle school, where it maybe used to sit up in high school. So that's there that way. And you'll see the split out of Health 1 and Health 2. It'll be interesting to see how you all take that in with your high school health because there was so much content, they split it out into two different half-year courses. So that's available now in those teams. And then this is how reproductive and sexual health plays out, the two of fourth grade and going on up from there. Not everybody knew those two were sitting there in 1998, but they were. A lot of this is new and expanded, and yet some of it, quite a bit, was there. You see the biggest jumps in 7th and 8th grade and 6th grade. So what do they say? What are in there? Well, this is the introductory statement that starts in 4th grade, and it highlights a couple of things. I'll work through them. You already know that the local control is over sexuality instruction. That's 28004. We looked at that. We also know that the right of the parent or legal guardian to be informed. We already looked at that. In here also, this was written in November prior to opt-in coming into place in June. So this is actually old language about opting out. Now we have the opt-in from when this was first written. And now we see this word centrality of abstinence was highlighted here. Couple of other things they added to be sure everybody knows across the state, the right of a parent or legal guardian to be informed of and consent to an abortion performed on their pregnant child was written in there, except with judicial authorization or medical emergency. A couple of other things they highlighted in this introduction is that you should be aware of, this is Senate Bill 22, that says there cannot be, there's a prohibition on taxpayer resources between state governmental entities, including public schools, and abortion providers or affiliates of an abortion provider. So an abortion provider such as Planned Parenthood can't contractually provide human sexuality instruction to your school. There can't be a contract there. And Now we've got, it explains that what if it says including, that must be mastered, where it says such as, that's across all subject levels. And then I like that they wrote this in here too. Students should first seek guidance in the areas of health from a parent or legal guardian. Really emphasize parents. And I will tell you, just like I told the Shaq, I was over at Grand Prairie earlier today, the best thing you can do going into this process is hear the parents and communicate, over-communicate with the parents. Show them how we're highlighting their role with their children. That's a big thing now, not just in Mesquite, but across the nation. And the more they can see parents are a part of it and valued as partners, the better they will feel and hopefully cause less trouble for you in the end. Parents are our partners, and we're needed. That's why so many of you are involved in your role as parents. I think you find that balance nicely. So what's included in the new TEKS? We have puberty and adolescent development beginning in fourth grade. Here they are. Explain changes that occur in male and female during puberty and adolescent development and defining the menstrual cycle. That develops on up into fifth grade. This is 5 of the 10 that are in fifth grade. You can see now we're describing the process of the menstrual cycle and identifying, describing roles and hormones. It kind of broadens from there. Fifth graders are going to learn about fertilization and reproduction. And one of my favorite things to teach fifth graders is fetal development. Teach them really kind of the miracle of their little lives and how they started from the joining of a male sperm and a female egg is part of the fifth grade content now. I will make a point that the State Board of Education did not approve a curriculum for elementary kiddos for K through 5. There is some really great material out there. We're going to be doing a program called Bright Bridge, which will be a curriculum for 4th and 5th grade on human sexuality coming up. So Bright Bridge will come out in the spring. But that is not part of the approved SBOE curriculum. We also have healthy relationships. Defining them, communicating boundary setting. That's what this looks like in sixth grade. You'll see this whole subtopic. The strand is reproductive and sexual health, and then healthy relationships are there. These are easy to get a hold of if you want to dive into the content that's here. But you can see things about friendship, infatuation, dating, romantic relationships, and marriage. Here's our discussion of marriage. And all the way down, describing how healthy marriages can contribute to healthy families and communities. People sometimes are concerned about that marriage piece, and yet you see the context is really giving an aspirational idea of a healthy marriage and what it can look like, even for children who don't have that experience. But it can be a protective factor in their life to teach them about those different kinds of healthy relationships. So that's there. Refusal skills, which are about resisting negative peer influences and reinforcing personal boundaries. They're there. Clearly communicating and respecting personal boundaries in middle school there as well. And the right to refuse sexual contact. So this is really important to catch the difference between refusal skills. And I'll show you how that compares to consent. It's really the direction of the content that's being taught. This is how refusal skills are in the TEKS. And then we've got, coming up, STDs/STIs. I will tell you that they are absolutely in the field, used interchangeably. People will try to tell you, well, you have to say diseases or you have to say infections. Really, the concepts are the same. And if you look at the CDC, here's their website, they absolutely use both STDs and STIs. So we try to, people say, well, what do you think we should use? I always say, I think you should use what works in your context and makes sense to your audience. So we use them interchangeably, and that's exactly how we wrote them into the TEKS as well. So you'll see there's quite a bit of content in middle school about STDs and STIs. They are at an epidemic. Young people being exposed, most of them asymptomatic. 1 in 4 sexually active teenagers will get an STD every year. We can talk about the difference between curable and non-curable and short and long-term outcomes of STDs. And we provide a lot of training on that topic, but it is here in the TEKS. In Health 1, you can see how that comes out even more, kind of more in-depth looking across STDs and STIs. See also that we have the emotional risks. The law uses that word trauma. We brought it down to risks. And we look at it here, identifying emotional risks that can be associated with sexual activity for unmarried persons of school age, including stress, anxiety, and depression. So That's there supported by the literature, and I would give you an example of a study that was done, a federal study that assessed the benefits of delayed sexual activity. Some of those things that they talk about as correlations between the timing of first sexual activity and a whole host of outcomes, educational attainment, single motherhood, poverty, depression, and overall happiness in adulthood. Delayed sexual activity improves reported relationship satisfaction for those who later marry. And then specific to girls, we see this relationship between reducing future chances of a first marriage ending in divorce and increasing the chance of graduation and decreasing depression. That's a really important part of the conversation that is often left out when the focus becomes condoms and contraception, is what about hearts and minds and physical, not just physical, but emotional and mental and relational health as well. So that's all there in the TEKS now as well. Contraception, the one SE in 7th and 8th grade and one in high school, you'll see. And here's how it's written in 7th and 8th grade. Analyze, that's a higher level word, the effectiveness and the risks and failure rates, the human use reality rates, of barrier protection and other contraceptive methods in the prevention of STDs, STIs, and pregnancy. This is out of the law. Flipping back, and you'll see where that same language is used. I think it's really important that they put in STDs here and pregnancy. Again, we do a lot of focus sometimes on pregnancy, and it's fairly easy to prevent pregnancy among young people. It's not easy to prevent STDs or the emotional risks that come along as well. So that content is here. This is a slide I like to show people out of CDC, because a lot of times we get into this debate, we lose sight of the science and the messaging of what we're really teaching the young people. So I'll walk you through this quickly. It could be a whole seminar on a Saturday, but let me show you what the Centers for Disease Control says. Consistent and correct use of latex condoms reduces the risk for many STDs that are transmitted by genital fluids, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and trichomoniasis, for example. All right, next step statement says that consistent and correct use of latex condoms reduces the risk for genital ulcer diseases like herpes, syphilis, and chancroid only when the infected area or site of potential exposure is protected. As I've told young people in schools, middle and high school for several years, a condom doesn't cover all of the skin in the sexual area of the body. These are skin diseases spread through skin-to-skin, body-to-body contact. That's also why we have to talk broader than just intercourse when we're talking about sexual activity and their risks. But CDC says there is risk reduction when the infected area is protected, and that just doesn't always happen with these diseases. But then last, we may reduce the risk for genital HPV and HPV-associated diseases like warts and cervical cancer. You see how it kind of dropped down in the reduction? Reduces the risk for many if they're fluids, reduces the risk if they're covered, and may reduce the risk for HPV. HPV is the most common STD among young people today. It's the one that can lead to warts and cancer. It is the one that we recommend the vaccination for because it can greatly reduce the risk even further. But I want you to see the progression going down, but I really want you to see, consistent and correct use is key to all of that. And with young people, this is where we have the problem, is consistent and correct use. I referenced that earlier. Here's a little chart that kind of summarizes up the studies that show us those numbers, how they start highest with the fluid transfer diseases, and then kind of drops down into skin disease of herpes, and we don't really even know about HPV and syphilis, their true reduction through those skin diseases. All right. So the last thing I want to highlight here is sexual abuse and dating violence, and introduce Senate Bill 9. So it's interesting because these topics are included in the new health TEKS, but this summer, as part of the special session of the legislative, Senate Bill 9 was passed. And you'll see that it's an act by the legislature. It may be cited as the Christine Blue Ball Act, a young woman whose life was lost as a dating violence victim about 20 years ago. And as part of their work for advocating for prevention, the family was involved with the legislator in getting this passed. It's in the prevention of child abuse, family violence, dating violence, and sex trafficking. And what we did as part of the work there this summer with the legislator is make sure that these topics come up under you and come up under 28004. So this is language taken out of 28004. In fact, if I bump back, you will see section 28004 is amended by adding those subsections. So all of the content taught in your schools now around these topics has to come under you, comes under 28004, which prior to this also got the opt-in. So it's a little bit tricky. We were talking about how these topics have been taught or will be taught now in line with the new health TEKS, but they would fall up under then the opt-in. And most of them are related to sexuality in many ways anyway. But it highlights these really important topics for our students. So that's in there, the same about, you'll see the language that districts human sexuality instruction or instruction relating to those four topics. Same process selected by the board with the advice of the chef.
Can I ask a clarification question? So there was some concern about having a parent at home that may be abusing a child, asking them to opt in to being educated about that abuse. So what was the thought process behind that, having child abuse be an opt-in piece?
Well, in the debate and the dialogue that I was heard around it by the legislators and a lot of the hearing, the testimony that was a part of that, is kind of, there's that side of the coin, but then there's the other side of the coin, where if the parents are not made aware of that content or brought into the content as a whole, then things can happen at school or be talked about at school that they're not even aware of. So it's that transparency and awareness for parents. I think if you have a situation like that where that's known, we want to know that. We want the school to intervene and address that very difficult situation to protect that child, which would be a responsibility piece anyway, right? So I think that it was sort of the need of the greater need of parents knowing this very specific and sensitive topic is being taught to was why it went in that way. I think that's kind of the best way I know to explain it, but it's kind of that piece of if you have a 6 or 7 or 8 year old at school taking on these topics, it would be you would want to, most parents would want to know about that information coming to them. So that's some of where that goes.
So question.
Yes, ma'am.
So you're saying there are going to be 6, 7, and 8 year olds that you're talking to about sex trafficking?
Family violence.
Thank you for the clarification. You'll see in the TEKS for those younger grades, there are some content around child abuse. This is lumped together for all students, but I did imply that 6-year-olds were learning about sex trafficking, and I didn't intend to. I'll show you where the sex trafficking content is. In 5th grade, you'll see these ideas, these higher dating violence and sex trafficking, but child abuse itself often is talked about with younger children in that injury and violence prevention TEKS, which can be pulled up, and you can see that grade by grade what are in there around those topics. What I want to tell you about these topics is they were already in the TEKS before this was passed. So teach your TEKS, involve your parents in the process, and you'll be good to go and get that permission when these topics are coming up. I would just do it for health, really, as a whole. You don't need to get opt-in for teaching nutrition and fitness. But when these sensitive, the idea is watch out for the sensitive topics and involve your parents in that process, I think is a general way to say that. So here's what it looks like in 5th grade. 5th graders are asked to define sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual assault, and sex trafficking. That's where sex trafficking first comes into 5th grade. Yeah, the whole thing about abuse, people say we're trying to prevent abuse among children. It's not up to those 6, 7, 8 year olds to prevent the abuse. It's about them to understand what abuse is and what to do if it happens to them. So I in some of these discussions, I'm like, 7-year-olds cannot prevent child abuse. They can know what it is and know how to get help if it happens to them or someone they know. Does that make sense? It's a little bit of a tweak on the language to me that's important in the direction of what that kind of content is. But this is 5th grade. I would just recommend you pull up the K-4 TEKS and just take a look at how those other topics are in there and think about how to get them opted in around the sensitive subjects. your 7th and 8th grade taking on a little bit more. They're just kind of listed one after another, the definitions and protective strategies for avoiding unsafe situations, which is more appropriate middle school content. And dating violence comes in there down on E. So quickly, I'll walk you through what is not included in the new health teaks. A lot of discussion in the 18 months that the board looked at this and heard public hearing was this idea of consent education. I referenced earlier the problem with consent is literally what it means. Consent means affirming, going forward, agreeing to or negotiating for sexual activity. In fact, I pulled a couple slides from these national organizations that define consent. So this is the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network. Consent is an agreement between participants to engage in sexual activity. So if the law in Texas says we're going to avoid sexual activity until marriage, then this would contradict that. Does that kind of make sense a little bit? I'll help you understand this a little bit more. Should be clearly and freely communicated, a verbal and affirmative expression of consent can help both you and your partner understand and respect each other's boundaries. How about love is respect, another provider on this topic? Consent means communication every step of the way. Don't just assume your partner is comfortable with action. It requires a clear and enthusiastic yes. Meaning if someone seems unsure, stay silent, don't respond, or says maybe they aren't saying yes. That's a decent statement to understand what's a yes and what's a no, but the point is agreeing every step of the way, and it's pretty easy to pull up. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. You're talking about those definitions, the rain and the love and respect. Are they being taught what yes and no means, or you're not going to touch the subject of consent at all?
Yeah, let me show you where it comes up. It's in the legal consent. Actually, I did pull the slide. What's going to be taught is the legal, the laws around consent in Texas, which is the age of 18 in Texas. So that's an important part to understand what consent is. What I showed you earlier were the refusal skills about resisting or moving away from, and that's where the discussion about no's and yes it would be more appropriate in a refusal skills context and not consent.
So then we'll be taught the refusal.
Yes.
Oh. So the TEKS basically teaches them how to say no, but doesn't teach them how to say yes or how to consent, because we're encouraging them not to say yes.
Not.
Yes. And it's not that consent is bad. I wouldn't say it that way as much as knowing how it's taught. And it's usually taught the way I just showed you, about a negotiation. So the things I've seen some of the curriculum providers nationally will say things like, you know, you're going to set up a scenario in the classroom and you're going to role play. May I put my hand up your shirt? Yes, you may put my hand up your shirt. May I put my hand up? Like you're negotiating, moving towards it. Or if you can Google what is consent on YouTube and you'll find all kinds of things that are concerning. So it's all, like I said, the definitions from a number of those providers move you straight towards the yes, whereas the TEKS and the law move us towards the no and refusal skills. So that's where we're teaching that communication and respecting boundaries. That's all in there. What I showed you earlier, a couple slides back, you could flip on your chart faster than I could do. And then the other big one that's not included in the new health TEKS, and actually makes a good point. Let me say what it is, and that is gender identity, sexual orientation, or LGBTQ issues. This was debated on and talked a lot on during the State Board of Education hearings on this topic. I will show you the position of where the State Board of Education landed, but I will also make this statement, and perhaps I should have said it when I first introduced the TEKS. TEKS are the floor and not the ceiling. TEKS are the foundation. Every TEK must be taught. But what your district chooses to go above and beyond that is up to your district. So I want you to hear me say, it doesn't mean you can't teach these topics. It would be accurate to tell you they are not in the TEKS. And there's reasons for that. I'll show you the reasonings from the board itself. These were some from the comments where you'll see there were two comments made. Our us and 1,800 others expressed support for not differentiating instruction around those issues. And the SBOE agreed and determined that health education TEKS do not specifically address those issues, but they are inclusive of all students. That's really important. The TEKS are for every child, no matter what their sexual orientation or gender identity is. They all should be taught that they are worthy of respect. They all should be taught communication. They all should be taught avoiding risks. So that's in there. And then you'll see again repeated, SBO agrees appropriate sex education should be inclusive and support the needs of all students. And it disagrees that it was necessary to specifically address those issues in the TEAS. They decided for 5.5 million children teaching in the classrooms in Texas, for several reasons, we did not differentiate instruction for LGBTQAI plus identified students. These are difficult topics. They're confusing topics, and they vary greatly across the state and community by community. If your community felt differently and had the community values represented differently, you absolutely could bring in curriculum that taught those other topics, consent and LGBTQ. But I'm representing accurately to you that they are not in the TEAS. You are not required to teach them. Yes?
I was up with you to Q. You said AI plus?
Yes, sir.
And what is that?
Well, there are over 70, as sometimes they say, different gender identities now. AI is asexual, I is intersexual, and plus is sort of anything farther down this continuum on the spectrum of gender identities.
It's a whole lot of it there.
So,
very complicated, actually.
So my point there, again, is kind of thinking in terms of classroom instruction. We take a position that for the dignity of the children and protecting their individuality and their individual needs, those topics are better discussed with parents and in an individual environment, maybe even a counseling environment or something like that if needed. That's kind of where we land in terms of being inclusive as the TEAS are today. So that's there. That kind of wraps up that big content. I'm going to give you a couple more slides and close out, and then you'll be thinking of your questions and discussions we want to have going forward. So these are new standards for sex education that are national, actually in 20 countries being used now, and well, not being used, I should say it that way, have been downloaded in 20 countries and in 42 states. We were launched in June. I've got a couple of them. They're available for you pretty quickly off the internet as well. These can help write this curriculum for K-12 on positive character and healthy relationships that ultimately set up for optimal sexual development. It's just a resource for you all. It's available under four key topics of positive character. And that goes K-12. Healthy relationships goes K-12. And then starting in that late elementary age, you're going to get puberty, reproduction, and optimal sexual attitudes and behaviors. Optimal is a really important word in this discussion. Even when you use that word reduce, you hear the difference between reducing risks and avoiding risks. Avoiding would be an optimal health approach, whereas reducing is making better, but is it satisfactory to the health and current and future health of our kids would be part of that discussion. And then the sexual risks that are there, those are available at newsexedstandards.org. We're taking on optimal sexual health education. We are absolutely bringing medical accuracy, evidence-based or evidence-informed. We can debate those two terminologies. They are absolutely age-appropriate, inclusive, trauma-informed, and aligned with the health TEAS. Your State Board of Education worked for 2 years and landed with a broad set of health TEAS that teach optimal sexual health education. And I believe, and this are the kids off the front of those standards, that we have an incredible opportunity to reach today's young people. We already said earlier, they are being bombarded with pressure and misinformation from the culture, from their peers. They need what's true and good that protects their physical, mental, emotional, and social health along the way. And I know that's what you all are all about. These are some of our resources. Some of them I brought here along if you want to learn more or know more. We do a lot of work in communities and school settings and church settings, whatever can be helpful to you all, professional health professions, some of that training. And that's us. And that's where I end. Easy to get a hold of us or as you all go along this process, and happy to answer any questions or discussion we might have.
I know we got to ask questions along the way. Does anybody have any questions? The difference in what I presented to you last week and what she presented to you is she was there when many of the TEAS were developed, so she has some firsthand experience, and as I showed you, told you last week, she was very specific about what's included.
Last month.
Okay. I'm saying last week.
Yeah.
Wait, last week? I'm sorry, it's all blurred. So does anybody have any specific
questions. I think what this is really going to help with as a group is when we start looking at the materials, because our next two meetings will be the presentations of what was approved, one at a secondary level and then one that we're considering at an elementary level. So you have specific criteria now to look and see. The good thing is that the materials that we're looking at have already been kind of scored by TEA. And so one of them that's going to present to us is 100% TEKS compliant and state board approved. The other one is 100% TEKS compliant, although they weren't approved on a tiny little technicality. I don't know.
The waiver.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So on a tiny little technicality, but they're 100% TEKS approved. Our school district stance is that they want us to select materials that were approved by the State Board of Education because we have that backing. School districts that write their own, a lot of times get a lot of pushback from the community and there's nobody to back them up. And so the State Board of Education, for the materials we're looking at, they've already vetted them and they've already looked at them and analyzed them and said, oh, they do meet 100% of the TEKS. So that's what we'll be doing in our next two meetings. She won't be here. The expert won't be here. So if you need TEKS specific questions, feel free to ask her now. I think she does a great job of just laying it out step by step.
Karen, can I address something you asked a while ago?
Yes.
I feel like I can help you with something. You had a real look on your face a while ago. So.
Well, I had that several times.
So we were talking about one of the TEKS and you kind of asked what Kinder and second, you know, first.
Right.
So let me read you one of the Kinder, because we'll say extra means not in Kinder, but let me read to you
this question.
One of the new Kinder TEKS that goes along with the injury and violence prevention, and then it also addresses the safety digital citizenship. And what the TEEK says is that we'll help students identify situations when one should get help from a teacher, parent, or other trusted adult when made to feel bullied, uncomfortable, or unsafe, and that includes even in a digital or online environment. So that's how that TEEK looks at the kindergarten level.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's kind of think back to our Stranger Danger Day.
Right. That was what I was thinking, yes.
And then in second grade, that same TEEK reads, demonstrate refusal skills to protect personal space and avoid unsafe situations. So it's not going in that in depth, it's building to that in depth. But even in kids in second grade know, they have that gut feeling that tells them, this is an unsafe situation for me, so we help them with how to get out of that or how to handle it.
Okay. And what we want, just so that you'll kind of, and this is still in the works, we're figuring this out as we go along, for those SB9 topics like family violence, child abuse, dating, all that stuff, that's a lot of things that our guidance counselors already talk to the kids about in little lessons, mini lessons in the classroom. So we are looking at with those SB9 topics, which are the sex trafficking, family violence, dating violence, child abuse, not doing that through a classroom setting, but continuing to let our guidance counselors with a little bit more stringent continuity continue to be the one that delivers those lessons to the kids, because that's their area of expertise and that's what they're already doing. It would be more regimented, more consistent, more TEKS-based. We would make sure that all the campuses were using the same program rather than, but we actually have a meeting set up with the guidance, with the director of counselors, director of nurses, because again, part of this stuff under SB9, the nurses already do in many lessons in the classrooms. So our spin on that is, why not let the experts continue to be the experts and deliver that part of it and take it off the plate of the classroom teacher or the health teacher and continue to let them be experts in their fields because that's what they're already doing.
Would they still need a signed permission slip?
It still has to be, but think about the puberty video that they watch in like fourth and fifth grade. That's already something you have to give them permission for. That's not new. That's always been permission based, so that's not new.
It just moves from opt out to opt in at this moment. So right now, this, you know, our current situation was you only let the school know you didn't want your kid to see
it. I just think for child abuse, that's the only hiccup that
it is.
We see.
But I think a lot of times when the counselors deliver those lessons, or just being, I think our classroom teachers and our teachers and stuff are so intuitive anyway. You know, our teachers recognize that a lot anyway. So that we can hope that teachers recognize signs. You know, we educate our teachers yearly on what to watch for that anyway. And despite the fact that whether or not you and I don't think that's a great idea, it is the law. And I mean, we have to follow that law. And we will do that. We will continue to educate our principals and our administrators on looking for the signs of abuse to you know, catch that anyway. We'll still be proactive in that regard.
So what you're saying is that if a teacher spots something that is clearly child abuse, it doesn't matter if the parent opted the kid in or not. I mean,
the only thing they're opting in is those lessons. If a teacher suspects a child is being abused, the teacher has a legal right to report that.
Legal obligation.
Oh, okay.
In a nutshell,
it's already been done. So,
this is my question about the opt-in. So what if, because depending on the grade level for sure, you're going along and you're having your lesson and then some kid brings up the subject of that's within there, but it's an opt-in subject. How does the teacher handle that? I'm just curious.
So our teachers are already educated. Like when we do staff development, first of all, I'll put this out there, and we tell our teachers this all the time. You never know what's going to come out of a kid's mouth. It could be algebra and congruent English, and they could bring sex up. I mean, that's just the fact. We can't shut class down and say, wait, we didn't opt into this.
Right.
You know, so our teachers are trained, especially our health teachers, trained to say, you know, that's not a topic for today's lesson. We'll cover that more during our permissions-based unit. But they're pretty skilled because this is what they do at neutralizing something like that. If it's a kid that they're not doing it for shock value, it's a legit thing, then the teacher can always say, why don't you come see me after class? And, you know, or a lot of teachers keep a box, like a question box or a topic box. So our teachers are already trained at that. But again, you never know when a kid might say what. So they're pretty skilled at neutralizing things and recognizing it too. Part of the training that our teachers have had just recently is recognizing why that kid's asking that question. Is it for attention? Is it for information? Is it for affirmation? And so we train our teachers on that anyway.
Wow. You know, that's just a lot.
It is a lot.
That's a lot. I think our teachers need way more prayer than that.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Oh, I guess a question or a concern. So if this is the groundwork that the teeth laid out, that we're in the bottom floor, I'm assuming us as a track board, we're not looking to go above and beyond because of kind of just what you just said. Because the teachers, there's already counselors and other teachers that are teaching stuff above and beyond anyway.
Well, you have to see also, so our school board takes the stance that we're only looking at textbooks that are 100% compliant. So that's kind of our school board or our district policy of saying, we like where we are.
Okay.
So Mesquite ISD is not in the practice of going above, multiple reasons. For one, my teachers will have to bend over backwards in that one semester to cover what's already there. And that's the minimum. So the law says we have to cover all this. We hardly have time to cover that. If we start adding things to this unit, then they don't get to this unit. We're out of compliance because we legally didn't meet the minimum because we're over here doing extra here. Does that make sense?
Yes. And then we still got to teach reading, math, science.
Christy?
So silly question. The stuff that we're going to look at later, you said it's 100% TEKS. Is there more to the books than, like, if the floor is here, is the book the floor? Or is the book maybe a little above, like, set on a couch?
Right. So I know for sure, and Lori, correct me if I'm wrong, or just just speak over me or shove me out of the way. I know that some of the textbooks that weren't approved were because they went above.
Okay.
We have a very conservative State Board of Education, and when they realize that, hey, you, here's what we ask you to do. These are the teaks that we ask you to cover, and you're up here. We didn't ask for that because remember, the teaks are the minimum.
Right.
And so if your minimum, if you've accelerated your minimum, then that's where communities become upset because the state asks you to cover this, and you did this, and that doesn't reflect the beliefs of our community. And so what we're looking at will cover the teaks and just the teaks.
Okay.
And it will take us all semester to do that.
But I will tell you about Goodhart. Go to look at them, the middle school and high school publications that were approved. They were very thorough with our language. It's Texas's language now. In the teaks, you'll see one page after another. They were written for our teaks. They're very in-depth. Now, the thing that sometimes is a little bit subjective is how much time do we need to spend on that topic to cover it. So it's not just line by line, here's the teaks. It's, you know, it's the content that is around that to make sure the child has proficiency on that piece of knowledge or skill, right? So, but I will tell you that, as Wendy said, the two that did not even come close were not in compliance with the law and went well above the teaks, did not meet the 100% of the teaks. You can pull up their numbers. You can see they were down in the 80s. They didn't get the 100% mark that Goodhart Wilcox did. And they had consent and LGBTQ content, which the State Board did not put in. So what was approved is accurate to say does not have those content, those two pieces of content that the SBOE did not put in there.
So as a district,
very rigorous process of review for accuracy and age appropriateness and suitability and all of that was in place. I can tell you more, and we can talk about it later too, about Quaver. You know, they were approved on Tuesday, but not on Friday, and that was kind of became a political thing. But I think you're wise to take a look at them and see that compliance with 100%. So.
What we can do as a district is look at the teaks and say, we don't like that one, mm-hmm. we don't like that one, we don't like that one. We're required by law to cover those teaks. Mm-hmm. Now, the good thing about that is, with this opt-in, if a parent's not comfortable with us covering those minimum teaks, they don't have to opt their student in. So that will be my teacher's platform is, I am required by law to teach this to these students. That's my job. It's the law. But if you're not comfortable with it as a parent, then your child doesn't have to stay in here for that portion of our curriculum.
And then if it goes above and beyond, the thing is, go back to your parent and talk about it?
Again, it's a training piece for our teachers. You'll see when we get the teaks out, there's a lot about referring students back to that trusted adult. One of the big things with the teaks is, everywhere you saw the word parent before, it's now, correct me, parent, guardian, or trusted adult. There's also a constant referral back to health professionals and like counseling services. So our teachers are trained to not try to do it all themselves,
right.
but to refer them back to the people who are experts in that area.
I have a quick question on that. But what if the trusted adult is a teacher?
So
or the nurse?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes, you know,
that is definitely trusted.
Yeah. So
it kind of covers a teacher if they go above and beyond talking about it.
No, but
we always tell our teachers, though, I may be the trusted adult,
right.
but I'm not a nurse, and I'm
right.
not a counselor. So as a teacher, I'm going to listen, and then I'm going to say, I'm not an expert in that field. Let me walk you down and talk to the Mr. Guidance Counselor. Let me walk you down and meet with
right.
Nurse Smith.
You're not going to, I guess where I'm getting at is you're not going to shut the kid down and say, no, you have to come to your parents.
No.
And it's just that where we can, we want to elevate parents, but the reality
right.
is not every child has that in place. Mm-hmm. We know that. So
well, not every
that's
kid
why
wants
it's
to
important to always go parents first, but it's always a more legal guardian.
Okay.
And there's a difference when a student comes to you at a class and confides in you and wants to have that conversation,
uh-huh.
than having a class discussion.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I was getting at. Does that mean, and I'm does that mean, well, I can't talk to you. If you ask me this question, I cannot say that to you because it's not in the teens.
No.
Okay.
But that means I'm not going to teach.
Tell them class. Not going to discuss yes. The
whole class.
Okay.
That's a training piece for our teachers. But do you before this legislation, you didn't think students brought hard topics to the teachers?
Oh, I'm sure.
That happens all the time. And that's why the teachers are there for those kids.
You cannot say enough to the what you guys do with the teachers.
No, I mean,
well, there's a bucket for donations on the way.
Teen pregnancy and the rising of all those sexual transmitted diseases, etc. Is it realistic to just talk about abstinence?
I think when you hear, and it's not just abstinence, again, knock me out of the way, but when you hear the content that can be, like the one that are in place, choosing the best, mm-hmm. I mean, those kids aren't going to let it just be abstinence. I mean, those kids have questions, right. You know? And so if you'll notice how statistical and factual rather than value driven. Everything they discuss is medical factual because you have to be real careful where you go beyond that because you're fine if the teacher's values match yours. But what if the teacher's values don't match yours? And so our teachers are taught to be very clinical, medical, and factual. Did I do that right?
I think you did a beautiful job. The only other thing that came to my mind, I mean, you did a beautiful job answering, is to consider what we do in other academic areas and even in other health areas. So when we're talking about smoking, we teach them, don't smoke, because it's risky for them to do that. We don't show them how to use filters on their cigarettes, right? So that's an example of that. Same with alcohol. We take risk avoidance in other health areas of life as well. And then you think about aspirational. We teach for them to get 100 in math. Even though we know they won't all get 100, we're teaching for the 100. It's another way, I think, I don't know if that lines up with educators as well, but that's some of how we talk about the what are we teaching to and what are we providing full information for. I think we have a responsibility to ensure that the child who is sexually active knows those risks and is aware and is equipped to make the risk reduction decisions they need to make. If they think that condom's 98% effective and they're good to go, then that's not accurate information that they base that decision on. So that's where.
And the only reason why I say that my daughter is a junior in high school, and a girl in her class, younger than her, 16, she will be 17 next year, pregnant. And a couple girls that we know, my daughter and I know, have had sexual transmitted diseases. So I'm like, I'm being realistic.
I'm so glad you brought that up because it's really important. I don't have it on these slides. You'll see it in the TEKS. There's a whole idea of support around returning to abstinence for those that want to. There's also information in there about those who are sexually active need to be tested and have treatment and be taken. So there's a whole other piece of, if you are sexually active, there's a whole lot in there on dealing with pregnancy and getting prenatal care. So
does that go for everything? Like sexual activity, but does that go for like the drug use and all that stuff too? That you can go back, like how to not do it
after you use
this.
Yeah, I think that's part of the whole avoidance message. It's not about what you've already done, it's about what's ahead of you. And everybody has the opportunity to have the best information to move forward and making a better decision ahead.
Well, a lot of times it's don't do this, but then the kid's like, well, I've already done it, so
yeah, right.
I can't go back. Our existing choosing the best curriculum, the one that delivers it, he's fantastic. And there's a big piece in there, and I don't know if y'all get to hear it. There's a whole thing about, so maybe you had, there's no shame and there's no judging is what I love about the program, about if you have already participated in sex,
to have that it's okay, and you can still say no. And he does a great job training our teachers on that piece.
He's great. And ask him to show that piece of it. It can be helpful.
Quick will do what Deborah told him.
But that's included also in the piece. This is what you can do to prevent doing it again.
Yes. For sexually active teens, okay. They need to be tested and screened and getting help and support from parents and trusted adults and medical providers. That's in there. Return to abstinence is in there. And peer support and relationships, and there's a lot in there. I think they worked really hard on the content.
And the reduction of shame, because there's a lot of kids that are sitting in the class that have had sex, and they regret it. They're ashamed of it. And there's a huge piece on a no shame, no judgment environment. So I hope you found tonight informative before our next step. Our next step will be to begin hearing from, we will be hearing from Goodhart Wilcox, we'll be hearing from Quaver, we'll be hearing from Choosing the Best, anybody who we are considering for human sexuality or those SB9 pieces will present to you. You will get your own copy of their resources. You will get online access to preview the resources outside of here. You can share those with people. And then regarding the public meetings that she was talking about, our next two meetings where we actually have presented and we are actually discussing content will be public meetings. Now, do I anticipate a great showing out? I don't, but we will. They're posted. They will be open. They will be, I believe, audioed and videoed. I believe they're audio and videoed live, so people can watch them. People can watch them live, and that meets the definition of the open meetings, that they can actually watch the presentations and watch the discussions.
Remind me, if those individuals are allowed to come physically as well, correct?
They can. They can't participate. They can sit and.
And can they ask questions?
No.
Okay, I didn't know that.
If they have questions, how do they give them answers? Do they email you?
Yeah, I mean, like my information, my information is everywhere.
Our notice says if you have questions.
Okay.
Yeah. My number's already up there. Yours too, Christy. I'll put yours too. Considering for recommendation, I will actually set up, it'll look like a book fair, and everything will be spread out, and then people can actually physically come up and look and then interact with me that night and ask questions. And, you know, I like this part, I don't like this part, I wish there was more of this, that kind of thing. Any other questions?
Obviously, the teachers give the guideline that this is what they must teach and all that. I was talking to Coach Frank, but I know some of the, are y'all going to give the teachers like guidelines on like this is how you need to teach this so they don't go off the reservation and start?
Yeah, and they are. They already. This is what they're told. Legally, this is what you're to teach. And if you feel like, because I will have some teachers that say this isn't enough, and that they've said it before, and they'll continue to say it, and I have to tell them. I realize that your values want to go further, but the state of Texas and our school board says this is what we're going to do. And if you take it further, then there's no backing. As a district, we don't back you. So if they have a parent complaint or a complaint, then we kind of say, you were told not to. You're out of compliance with the district. They kind of, I'm told that you went rogue.
Yeah.
And if you go rogue, it's the same thing I tell my PE teachers about playing old school dodgeball. If you get caught playing old school dodgeball, you're on your own. I cannot back you because you were told not to do it.
You can't play the real dodgeball. He's like, do you know the way? I said, I do know the way.
Piece, and they're told that this was selected by Shaq, it was approved by the school board, and
go beyond that, you stand alone. So they'll know that going into it. Any other questions? These are great questions. I mean, this is what we want.
I'm just curious. If a teacher goes off the reservation, like you say, can they lose their job or do they get like probation? Or I'm just curious.
Can you go on the permanent record?
It depends on the situation.
It depends on the degree.
Oh, okay.
And probably how loud the parents are with these streets. Yeah, it's going to be a waiting.
I do not have any higher and firepower. So that goes way beyond my pay grade. Any questions?
Well, I have visited a lot of shacks in my day, and I think, is it the Christmas Story movie where little Ralphie's wanting the gun?
Yes.
And he writes the paper about it, and the teacher gives him an A, plus. I would like to give this shack in the seat. I just take an A, plus.
We'll take it, because it may be the only one we ever get.
My opinion is not worth much, but I appreciate that.
So our next meeting is January 27th. We will be hearing from publishers again this year. Just kind of really important that you come to all of them if at all possible. So we'll begin hearing from publishers. I will wait to see what time frame they request before I determine will we have a couple in one night or will we have one in one, and then we will, because we want to make sure to set time at that last meeting in February to have our discussion and make our decision. Any other questions? All right, we're going to adjourn at 8:01.